That was the most difficult part of growing up for me, the fact that I had no opportunity to create friendships. I was raised in an all-Christian milieu, working class. My mother would go to New York and bring back birth control material, come into the dining room and spell out for these Christian women how they could stop having babies without violating human dignity. It was a cute story. My mother could never drink water in Pittsburgh. She was so spoiled with New York that she'd go back to New York and walk and walk and walk. A real loner, but just the most wonderful person, not by the standards necessarily of the upper middle class that we ended up in, but by the standards of decent human feeling. I just thought my mother was something great.
Why did she like New York water?
It's the most beautiful water in the world. I don't know if you know this or not. It is a delicious water. In Pittsburgh, you drank chlorine.
Yeah.
My mother knew. But it was cute. There were so many experiences we had. For instance, my father was an active socialist. There would be a boat ride on the 4th of July, and we'd get on at Braddock and take something like the Delta Queen and stop at the corner of Smithfield and the water. I don't know if you've seen old pictures. I've got books here to show you. And they would dock this boat, and more people would get on, and we'd take the boat and get down to approximately Britain, West Virginia, and turn around and come back. It was exciting because this was the only thing in the summer that we got. I mean, then my mother had my younger brother when I was 12. She had 3 9-month babies destroyed by doctors between 4 and 7. It's a shame because my father took my younger brother to the cemetery to bury one, so we were there to see that. But my function was to...
Excuse me, you said destroyed.
I'm sorry?
You said they were destroyed.
Yeah,
by doctors.
They did that to childbirth.
The clumsy childbirth.
Babies lost the childbirth.
I see.
Three of them. Yeah, between 1900 and...
improper.
31 and 1921.
Improper delivery?
Improper deliveries. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you kept going with that. That was the... So that... So my summer was spent in washing diapers, taking piano lessons, cleaning the house, and if I was good for a week, I got a dime. Well, we lived about 2 miles from Kennywood, so you had a dime. You take the streetcar over and the streetcar back, you save the dime to buy the hot dog and the Coke. What do you do with that dime?
You walk.
Walk over, we thumb back, and I get the dime for the hot dog. And that was the summer. I can see it vividly. It was an old rickety Rankin bridge. It scared the hell out of you every time the streetcar the bridge would shake. But that was the summer, I can tell you. By 1933...
Where'd you go to high school?
By that time, I'd gone to Alderdice because my mom moved us into Pittsburgh in 1931. See, having gone from Swissvale to junior high school to Taylor Alderdice, and there I walked into a room that had 38 seats and 37 people, and I found one seat in the back, and I sat down, and I looked at this girl, and I said, hi. The son of a bitch turned her face away. That was my introduction to Jewish females in school. She is now the wife of son. Man in this town, you got to see her. I have to be nice to her.
But you do have to be nice to her.
Yes. But fortunately, within 2 weeks, Irving Sachs, who was Helen Warner's nephew, invited me to join this group of Jewish boys at the JCC called the Adelphi Club. And that was a great experience.
That's the one on the hill.
Well, no, we were down at Belfield by that
Belfield.
Time. Yeah, we were down at Belfield. And it was a significant turning point in my life because this was the first chance that I had to create a friendship with a Jewish boy. It was 1931, I was 13. Mm-hmm. graduated from high school at 16 and college at 20. But what was good about that relationship was I got them that cleanup on the mushball team, got to play basketball. And every Friday night we would hold a meeting, and the nine of them would sit down and gamble their hearts. And I would talk to them about, hey, I didn't have the money to gamble, B, I didn't know how to gamble, C, it didn't strike me as any awareness. None of them had any interest in music, none of them. Well, one of them was subsequently taken an interest, but not as a performer. So I lived in a different world. My mother made sure that she had the 50 cents for music lessons.
Yeah, tell me a little bit more about music.
It's the absolute foundation of my existence. My mother forced us to take piano lessons for 50 cents. Oscar Helfenbein, the kids were playing ball, but I was taking piano lessons Saturday morning. It was the greatest thing that ever happened to me, because by the time I got to Taylor Alderdice, and I went to see Mrs. Ziegler, and Mrs. Ziegler at that time the music director, I never knew what an orchestra was. I'd never seen one. Mm-hmm. I said, gee, I'd like to play an orchestra. She said, what do you play? I said, I play the piano. She said, that's not good. She said, I could use a bass viol player. I said, well, let's try. And she showed me how to hold my fingers and how to hold the bow. At that time, I was taking violin lessons because my father adored my brother who played the violin. I thought that if I took the violin, my father would take an interest in me. Incidentally, it didn't work. But the point was that by taking the violin, I got to be knowledgeable about the different positions as related to piano. And so when she said, this is a half tone between the first and second finger, and you might as well break the third finger in a half tone between the second and the fourth, and if you wanted a full tone, it was this, and this is how you hold the bow. And 30 days later, she sent five girls to me. She said, Bill, teach these girls how to play the bass. So that I taught them how to play the bass, and within a year I was in the All-City Orchestra, and I played with a great number of men who subsequently were hired by Klemperer when he put together the Pittsburgh Symphony in 1937, and there are still young kids playing in the symphony today that I played with in All-City.
So what do you play now, the piano or the bass?
Well, I play the piano 3 or 4 times a week, and I play the bass whenever I get a chance. But because I go to Florida and I play in an orchestra with 64 musicians, of whom I'm the youngest, they had 4 bass players, so I decided I was going to teach myself the viola, which they needed. So I'm now in the second year of teaching myself the viola, which is over in the corner, and I have a marvelous time because I play the viola down in Florida Tuesday, Friday, and Wednesday. Wednesday group is 25 musicians who play Broadway shows, the best musicians of the 64. And the 64 perform 3 times a year, including tonight. I'm in Pittsburgh, there in Florida. They'll play to 1,800 people, paying $3 a piece. Nobody gets paid. The conductor is a retired head of the conducting department at Columbia University. The first viola player started the Miami Symphony. The third viola player in that orchestra is the concertmaster for the Zurich Symphony in the summer. And the guy that I sit next to happened to play with the WOR orchestra when he was 14. But it's a happy time for me because I, my daughter said, Sally Roth, my daughter was vice president of the JCC, and she said, Father, you're having such a good time in Florida. Why don't you do the same thing for us in Pittsburgh? So 2 years ago, I organized the JCC Symphony. We now have 56 players, and we're getting a reputation, and I'm a happy young man.
Are you playing here?
Of course, I'm playing viola. We played at the temple on Saturday night for 573 people for the Russians, and we played the week before at the JCC with Patricia Prattis Jennings, the principal pianist of the Pittsburgh Symphony, as our soloist.
She's great.
She's great, and we were great.
Okay, I got to stop you. Tell me about high school. You almost did. What did you like? You did go to Alderdice. When did you graduate? And then how did you get to college?
I have always loved going to school because it meant getting out of doing diapers. And there was another factor that when I was in the first grade, my mother would go to the teacher and every year do the same thing. Tell the teachers that I was hard of hearing. because she couldn't in those days understand, to this day wouldn't have understood, a psychogenic hearing loss. And while a middle child in a highly competitive family, there are many reasons for not wanting to hear. Mm-hmm. And I think, and of course I had three tonsil operations before I was 15, including adenoids, because in those days that was thought to be the way that you improved hearing. I mean, the psychological loss of of being in a... There was 19 months separating the three of us, my sister and my brother. So three babies in 19 months. So it was quite a competitive thing. My sister graduated from Pitt in 1936, and I in 38, and my brother in 40. My sister took a master's degree at Johns Hopkins at 45 in order to teach at the Goucher. Mm-hmm. My sister represented...
That's the deaf.
My sister represented the, yes, represented the National Council of Jewish Women in the United States Senate. Mm-hmm. And had Senator Lee would come off the podium to commend her for her presentations. So we had quite an intense household in which we were at the dinner table, one of the most fascinating experiences you could ever imagine, because nobody gave anybody a chance to finish, and it was always on politics and whatever was going on in the world, and it was a go-go-go situation. Everybody had a say. It was a very exciting house to be raised in. And of course my parents also manifested significant pressures, money raising kids, so there were continuous arguments and fights. You got to the point where you just knew that was part of the course, and then eventually quieted down on the economic level.
How about finish up in Alderdice?
Alderdice was a very, very, very exciting, unpleasant experience, socially extremely disappointing, except for these kids that I was playing with that would have an occasional social event. Lucky enough to date a girl by the name of Joseph, who taught me how to dance. Mm-hmm. A lovely girl. And I've always enjoyed dancing. Played basketball.
Why was it so unpleasant?
You had a bunch of upper middle class, middle class Jewish bastards who excluded those who did not think as they thought. It's been the story of my life that most Jewish people don't agree with my basic philosophy. That's true of the Federation, and why I got the Specter Award instead of being allowed to become president of the Federation, having been chairman of the campaign for 3 years, having 50 years of experience. I was out of step, always out of step, because their middle-class morality, based on the Trinity of Westmoreland, Concordia, and Rhode Sholem, dominated their lives.
In your era, that
in
was
my era,
true.
That's true. And they had no interest in music. To this day, all of my wife's, most of my wife's friends don't go to the symphony. I haven't missed a symphony concert from 1934 to 1957. I've gone to the symphony now for 56 years. Mm-hmm. My presence just buried yesterday, and I started at the top floor of the Syria.
Okay, you got out of Alderdice.
I got out of Alderdice.
You dislike it so much you refuse to talk about it. Well, were there any teachers there that you remember?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, come on. I had a most thrilling experience in inorganic chemistry with Lon Colbert. Mm-hmm. My Latin teacher, Mrs. Simpson, was my homeroom teacher. Mm-hmm. And we had a terrible fight because she was going to decide who the president of the class was going to be. And I contested that, so we had a fight on that score. I played basketball. Scrub team.
A runt like you?
Yeah, because I was pretty good.
Pretty good shot.
Pretty good athlete, yeah. I never, I was at Shenley High the day that Horace Funk broke the city league scoring championship. I was scoring 34 points. That was the days of Billy Miller and Buzzy Greenberg going to Duquesne after Carnegie Mellon and Eddie Fuller going to Duquesne. It was cool. quite a bunch of good players, and Billy Jesko and Radovich from South High School, City School Basketball, 33-34, was fantastic. We won the state music championship against Clareton and Charleroi in 1934. We won the All-State Quartet, All-State Woodwind Quintet, All-State Clarinet, All-State French Horn. We had Joel Cedar play the bassoon, went to Poltergeist for the Kansas City Symphony to the MGM Orchestra.
How'd you pick college?
Because that's all we could afford. My father went to Mellon Bank and borrowed $150 to start my sister in school in 1934 and paid off $10 a week. And then at the end of the semester, she borrowed the second $150. And by 1936, she said, well, it's your turn. I'll leave. And my father said, no, you're not. You're staying. I'm going to borrow $300 and pay off $30 a week so we could get the tuition paid off. Mm-hmm. And that's how we went to college. We went to college. We walked. We lived on Bartlett Street and walked down through the ravine. By the time I was a junior, I had a car. I said, you know, man, you want to be part of the person in the car?
I
had $450. So he said, okay, and he gave me $450.
How'd you get the money?
Bought a brand new Ford for $900. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I used the Ford as the debate manager at 5 cents a mile to carry the people around. Mm-hmm. And then I became involved with the Intercollegiate Conference on Government.
At Pitt,
went to Harrisburg, carried six people, got 5 cents a mile. And that's the way I kept the car going, went to South Carolina. The car was doing fine. I would work on Saturday from 6 o'clock in the morning till 6 at night for $5. Mm-hmm. And with the $5, I took a girl out and had a date on Saturday night and managed not to and carried a sandwich from home because you couldn't afford to pay for anything down at Pitt. And we had no place to eat anyhow. We set up in Alumni Hall, and if you had 10 cents, you could buy a piece of cake or whatever. But it was an exciting time because I got a byline in the Pitt News within the first month. My sister was ahead of me, and she said to me, there's one byline that nobody's been able to get. We have an assistant dean of men who was a warden in a prison, and nobody's been able to get that story. I went into the men's room, and we sat next to each other, standing next to each other at the urinal, and I pumped them on this story, and I got the byline. And the article was so good that it was picked up for an editorial 3 inches in the Sun Times. Excuse me. The excitement of school. In the grade school, I had the pleasure of contending against four other people, two girls and two boys, in a very intense grade school situation where the five of us would score grades between 100 and 98 and a half in arithmetic and geography and history and English and spelling. And we had comprehensive examinations at the end of each semester that were so exciting because they were 3 hours in length. And I tell you that my math training was such that I don't even use the damn calculator because I can do it faster than anything. One of the kids was the son of a Presbyterian minister who became instrumental in Martin Marietta in developing a very significant United States Army airplane. One of the kids was an Italian boy by the name of Joe Zachary, graduated from Duquesne and became a high school teacher. One of the girls married her father was a real estate person, and she became a good golfer. The other one married living down in Uniontown. I tried to pull them together about 2 years ago. And of course, I found out that Billy Yates, my Presbyterian friend, was a jazz aficionado, and he sent me two tapes of the Butterfield 8. And I was invited, incidentally, to play with Glenn Gray and the Casanova Band at 16. Mm-hmm. And my mother said, no way, you're going to college. I went to college, but I never didn't play that bass fiddle with Benny Benack, with the Carnegie Mellon Community Symphony, with the Downtown Y, with anybody that ever needed a bass player. Now, last year, a bunch of guys came in from New York and organized a banjo ukulele group. And they were playing over at the nursing home on Negley Avenue. I took the bass over and I played with them.
Hey, that sounds
Never played from home. Harvey Gall. Now, this was, I played in the first opera orchestra because it started at the Calvary Episcopal Church. Harvey Gall was the musical director there. And this is 1940, and we were going to get married, and I took $80 to buy the bass fiddle, and I almost got divorced before I got married. Until I showed her that I earned $160 in the first year, because when we played with Harvey, we played for the opening of the flower show at Fitz. He would give us $5. We went down to Edgeworth to play for the Squitzer down in Sewickley, he'd give us another $10. When we played with the Bakalenikov conducted Eugene Onegin in 1941, the first Pittsburgh opera presentation, I got $21 that night. And this little blue car, this $900 car, came between me and my wife, because I'd sneak it in with a two-door car, and she'd have to sit in the front seat, and she complained for years. But in the meantime, it's been a source of tremendous gratification. And again, out of step, because you don't know anybody as Meshuggah.
Well, you're a wonderful character. See? I got to get you back. I got to get you back in line here.
But grade school was exciting because of the intellectual challenge. High school was exciting because I got out in 3.5 years. In the summer, I went to summer school, and I made college in 3.5 years also.
Okay, what year did you graduate with? What degree?
35 out of Taylor Alderdice.
And
30 in college, University of Pittsburgh, class of 1938.
Degree,
a Bachelor of Arts in Political Science.
Then what?
And then I went to Harvard Law School.
Mm-hmm.
And I only, unfortunately, was able to stay there 1 year and came back to go into a family business. And I became the president of the company. And eventually.
What company?
Then overall supply.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I want you to continue for a little bit.
Well, not Pitt.
To
Pitt
finish a note. No. Okay, you fit Pitt, and then a little bit about your business life.
Right. My Pitt experience was exciting because not only did I win the byline in the first month and become interested in the Pitt News and learn how to write a newspaper article, but then went over to the Debate Society and became the manager of the debate team had some very exciting freshmen that I was responsible for, including Judge Ruby Aldersert, who's now retired from sitting out in the Ninth Circuit in California. Jerome Lieber, and strangely enough, 6 out of the other 8 young freshmen that I was able to husband has since died. I remember so many of our guys went through World War II. Incidentally, I flunked the physical. Not only with my hearing, but flat feet, so I tried to get a Navy commission, and that didn't work. I took a course in military German, which I had enjoyed in high school, and so that Pitt was exciting for me. Became quite a big shot, and really never had time to listen. I won the highest vote in the history of the student-faculty elections. I started a course at the university called Preparation for Marriage, which was only the second such course in the United States. And I had to research, and the only other school that had a similar course was down at Chapel Hill. And then I went to Dr. Ali Molly Jamison, the head of women's health, and she and I put together the curriculum for a one-credit course in preparation for marriage, where they taught birth control, and they taught things which up until that time didn't exist. I was successful in bringing to the university a significant music program at the cathedral, where only the English room was finished, and I brought in a group of 30 black singers from East Liberty called the Mary Cardwell Dawson Singers.
Mary Cardwell
Dawson, fantastic choir. And the university wasn't very happy about that because it was all black. In my class, there were 2 black students, Johnny Woodruff, who won the quarter mile at the 1936 Olympics, and a beautiful black girl who became the head of the English department at West Virginia State University.
The Woodruff, the same time as Owens was running?
Owens and Woodruff both ran in Berlin in 36. I have been the class agent for the class of 38 and have put on all of the reunions since then. It's been a very unpleasant experience keeping up with some of these kids.
Why'd you have to quit Harvard?
First of all, I had no hearing aids in those days. And I passed all the courses except one. In those days, they had an automatic system of cutting the class down willy-nilly. Now remember, I graduated from Pitt with honors. Mm-hmm. I had taken constitutional law and scored an A. They didn't admit you if you weren't qualified, except the automatic system said, we don't care, look to the right, look to the left, one of you is not going to be here. To pass the contracts course took a 75 and I scored 74. I went back to ask them what happened. What happened was we had criminal law and the midterm, and I had no problem with that. But in the contracts course, this was a year in which Harvard was in transition. That was the year in which our dean was indicted. And the very great contracts teacher was Williston, who had been teaching at Harvard for 20-some-odd years and had written a restatement of the law, which was the first time that the legal profession attempted to compile in one place considerable law. Williston had retired. They brought in a fellow by the name of Gardner. Gardner had written a paperback book. Gardner had a cleft chin. And Gardner Crocker of Kirkland was wrong. And Gardner Crocker of Kirkland, and there were 150 hours because there was four sections. You've got to hear this because this is why I'm not a lawyer to this.
But I got to, you know, I got to get you on the machine. It's not going to get.
And so the first class, he said, good morning. Anybody have anything to say? In silence, class dismissed. Comes to the second meeting. Anybody have anything to say? One kid over in the corner says, well, I didn't understand this. Are you going to answer? Class dismissed. At the end of 6 weeks, I had 36 pages of notes. And Eugene Strasberg, who came from Pittsburgh and was my friend, had over 300. They had gone to a different section with a teacher that was a teacher. This idiot was out of the school, by this way, in less than 2 years. He taught us, gave us no idea. I'm so bright, I can't stand it. Couldn't hear him. Very good, right? And if he didn't say anything, and you were guaranteed to fail if you quoted Williston or the restatement. The first thing he said the first day, don't let me catch you telling me what the restatement says. Because in the training at the Harvard Law School, you quoted sources. You put together the law from the very bottom. The first case that we studied in contracts had to do with what constituted a contract. Mm-hmm. The man wrote a letter, and the letter got lost in the mail on an acceptance. And the contract wasn't concluded. And the second man tried to sue the first man because he didn't fulfill the contract. The law was then constructed, and we had to put it together by what constituted the closing of the circle. And it had to be the receipt of that letter by the offeror. And this is the way you did it. But what you did was, when you wanted to cite chapter, when you wrote an exam, you had to cite a precedent. And we weren't allowed to cite precedent. How could you possibly get to know what to do if you weren't allowed to go to the sources? So the best you could do would be to read the University of Pennsylvania and hope that he wouldn't recognize it, because in Pennsylvania they taught you with textbooks. Or to try to use the Yale system where they taught textbooks. They didn't teach you case studies.
Case studies. Okay? That's Harvard ever since.
Harvard ever since has been the world's greatest because of this technique. So I was not invited back.
Mm-hmm. Then what'd you do?
I came home and got into the industrial laundry business, and extremely successful, because then I got married at 22.
You got married when you got home?
I got out within a year, yeah. And I earned $900 in commission in the year, in the month in which I was married, put on 25,000 miles on my car that year and never left Allegheny County. Blew the whole $900. Had a marvelous time, and started this.
Where'd you go, Patty?
We started Niagara Falls. we were going to go to Toronto, but the St. Lawrence was barbed wire, and it was frightening because this is 1940, and Canada was already in the war, and the St. Lawrence was barbed wire. We were going to go to Toronto to Montreal, so when we saw the barbed wire, we headed straight for Montreal. And because it was so frightening that they were at war already, we only stayed overnight where I talked to my relatives. I have six cousins in Montreal, and I'd like to tell you about them when they get around to it, because my aunt there, my mother's youngest sister, became president of Odasa of Canada. And I would like to tell you about that family, because my uncle Aaron was named Paul Teal, and he's mentioned in the source, because Leah, the beloved of King David, is named Paul
Teal.
So it's a long history, so I can tell you an interesting story. So anyhow, we got to Montreal, then we went to Dixville Notch. Now it's July, Dixville Notch, New Hampshire, was so cold that we had to leave there. We went to Boston and to New York on Fifth Avenue bus. She started to teach me French. We had a marvelous time at St. Moritz. We went to Franco Goldman at Central Park, do on the Mall.
Goldman Band.
And so then we ended up in Harrisburg at Hershey. For $900, I got a hell of a 3-day honeymoon. And then went to work for $25 a week.
Uh-huh.
And
for who?